This is Tyler Byrne with Low by Lit. This is a podcast. I talk to authors, indie people, poets, and publishers. Been a fan of the scene for over 10, 12, 15 years. Today's episode, I spoke with Paul Hansen Clark. Paul lives in Nebraska and has a very well-known poet on the alt-lit scene. Today, we talked about poetry readings, Rachel Bell, and the early scene of alt-lit, and how Paul emerged from a small Nebraskan town to a big, influential poet in the alt-lit scene. I hope you all enjoy this show. This was a lot of fun. Also, don't forget, The Shabby Dollhouse is putting out two new books this summer, Log Off by Kristen Felicetti and The Island by Oscar Edouard. This is Oscar's first book in over a decade, so it's going to be interesting. I think you're going to want to check it out. You can go pre-order those books, theshabbydollhouse.com. All right, I'll see you guys later. Thanks for listening, everyone. By the way, this is Lo-Fi Lit. I'm here with Paul Hansen Clark, the previous guest. Thank you for joining me, Paul.
Thank you.
Who was the first poet that you read and you were like very inspired by? I don't know if I asked you this in a previous episode or not.
There's a few that come to mind. I guess I'll say two names. First one is Jack Spicer. Oh. And the second was probably Alice Notley. Those were the first two, like, I don't know, sort of like contemporary poets who I really connected with and felt activated by.
Dude, Rochelle Tamirano, she's like teaching like courses on Jack Spicer.
And yeah, I saw that.
I've seen his name come up a few times, just like reading like past like old lit mags on the Internet Archive. I've seen his name come up. So what about his work did you really like?
I mean, he's a very romantic figure, so that's part of it. He was like a he died relatively young. He's an alcoholic, he's like a druggie. So he had that kind of like reckless artist narrative like built into it, and that was part of the appeal for me. But yeah, he wrote his work was kind of like hard to come by too. It's like pretty rare when I encountered it. Like there's only one book of his stuff, and that went out of print in like the 70s or something. And then everything else was like locally produced chapbook type of things. Anyways, so yeah, I think the sort of romantic, him being this like fuck up alcoholic and him being this sort of like hidden poet or whatever, that was very appealing to me when I was in my early 20s. As far as his work goes, the thing that kind of turned me on is he wrote he referred to as like serial poems, and yeah, that's just like, I don't know, it was just like a way for him to write a poem, like, I don't know, it's just multi-part poems. It's just like the poem is called The Flowers, and then there's 17 parts, so like a book would be a single poem in his kind of conception of the serial poem. Also, there's these audio recordings of him. They're all like the Vancouver lectures, and they used to be really easy to find. They might be harder now because I think it was turned into a book maybe, but at any rate, he speaks a lot about his kind of philosophy and poetry and shit. And he has this thing where he compares being a poet to receiving signals from Mars. And I just found his philosophy of poetry very intoxicating and empowering.
In what ways?
Well, just like, so with the serial poem thing, it's just like, oh, I can have a poem that's just composed of these parts that are their own thing, and maybe like part three sucks or something, but when it's put next to part seven, then they like have this strange resonance, and that's like can be cool. So it's like, it's just some pretty basic, like the sum is greater than the whole type of shit. But for whatever reason, the way that he like kind of conceptualized it made a lot more sense to me than anything else I had encountered. And yeah, as for the Mars thing, like I don't know, it's just like it's a common trope for people to say that like the art that they create comes from some other place that's outside of them. And yeah, I don't know, this idea that you don't need to be this genius. All you have to do is like attune yourself to this like energy and then let it kind of flow through you. I think there's like a real truth to that. I think he's locating something that's like true. And yeah, it was cool to me and it activated me a lot.
So you said you did this like in your like early 20s. When you went to high school and college, were you interested in poetry?
In high school, I wasn't particularly interested in poetry. I remember being interested in poetry as like a young person, and I loved like a kid, and I loved like music. I loved lyrics. I liked cool lyrics from like songwriters and rappers and shit like that. But yeah, poetry was weird to me, and I remember in high school reading that William Carlos Williams poem, The Red Wheelbarrow or whatever, and my teacher like trying to impart upon us like this is genius poetry. It's has this incredible crisp clarity, and I just thought it was the dumbest shit I'd ever heard in my fucking life, and I hated it. Like I literally hated it. And in college, as far as writing goes, when I started college, I was much more interested in writing fiction. I wanted to write fiction. That was my ambition for the first few years of college, but then that radically changed once I sort of locked into poetry.
I feel like teachers would get a lot more progress if they opened up with a red wheelbarrow and like talk shit about it with the students instead of like telling him this is a genius piece of work.
Well, interestingly enough, like, and I mean, I've thought about, I don't know if I ever thought about this connected, but like the poetry class I took in college that like turned me on to poetry, basically, we read Spring and All, the book by William Carlos Williams that contains the poem The Red Wheelbarrow, and reading it within the context of its full book, like 80% of that book is just these like really strange rant type ramblings and shit like that. It's just these like weird, like collagey, like prose poems and shit. And then having these like little lyrical, like just moments, it does have a certain beauty and brilliance to it within the context of the larger thing. And I'm like, oh, okay, I see like why this excites people or why. And yeah, it was just funny that like I was presented the Red Wheelbarrow in this kind of like corny, typical way that was like off-putting. And then like the thing that the class that turned me on to poetry, like one of the first things that teacher did was correct that understanding or whatever, or deepen it or something.
So when you're in college, what was your major?
I majored in English and broadcasting, so I
Nice.
double majored. And then UNL, where I went, University of Nebraska Lincoln, to be a journalism major, you had to like either have three minors or two majors and a minor. So I minored in history and double majored in English.
Nice. So how was broadcasting? So did you do broadcasts?
Yeah, no, it was interesting. I look at the time, it's kind of pain in my ass, but I look back on my education, it was kind of unique because basically, like, I had these two tracks. The English track was just like pretty classic college shit, just like writing papers, reading books, talking about shit, very academic, blah blah blah. The broadcasting track was nothing like that. It was all like the classes were like, hey, you guys are gonna put on a news show every week. You know, it's just like, so we're just like learning how to work lights and shit like that. It's just like it was more of like a sort of technical school type of like educational pedagogy or whatever. So yeah, it was two very different approaches to learning, and I do think I benefited from, I didn't really think about it much at the time, but I do think I benefited from like having these two approaches and having to like, because just like writing bullshit papers, like stringing words together like that. That's pretty natural for me. So there's something about English major where it's just like I'm just doing this thing, writing random bullshit about books or whatever that doesn't feel challenging unless it's like a writer or a text that turns me on. With the broadcasting shit, it was like I don't know, just the tactility of it. Like you have to be in this room at this time to do this broadcast. It was just a lot harder for me.
Did you get better over time with it?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, it's weird to think about now because it's so long ago, but and I haven't I've worked at like newspapers and shit, but I haven't worked in that type of world. But yeah, no, I mean, like I remember one of our classes, we just like did the news on the radio for like 3 hours every week or some shit. And I
Cool.
remember like early on I was like a story about something that had happened, like a town like 200 miles away from here. And the teacher was like, "Why the fuck are you doing a story about something that's 200 miles away?" And I was like, "Well, it popped up on the little like AP wire thing or whatever." And he's like, "Who fucking cares? Like, no one here gives a shit about what's happening 200 miles away. Like, you should figure something out that isn't on the AP." You know, it really pushed me to like do some gumshoe fucking bullshit reporting. And then, like, you know, like later that year in that same class, like there had been this guy who shot this woman dead at a college party, and it was like a tragic accident type of thing. But his sentence was announced while I was doing this shift, and then I just like ran that story every single hour for the entire time. And the teacher was like, "That's," he was very impressed that I like had the sense to know that that was like the only important thing, and people would want to like anyone that heard that would be into it. So yeah, there's certain things that I improved on for sure. But yeah, some of this stuff with journalism, like having to have like a bunch of sources on every story and that type of shit, I really struggle with that. Like, just because I think I had a lot of anxiety with talking to people and stuff. So yeah, there was stuff about it that clicked for me eventually, but there's also stuff about it that I had a harder time with. Whereas the insular experience of just sitting in your room writing a fucking paper, that's not, yeah, like I said, it's not that challenging.
When you were doing the broadcasting thing, were you like coming up with like creative ideas that you wish you could have been doing instead?
Not really. There is a bit of like room for creativity, and I had some fun with like the assignments. Yeah, I guess like I found the particularly like the video stuff to be like a fun challenge. A lot of these assignments, because they're very narrow, they're very specific, they're very geared toward like, I don't know, just like learning one little piece of the puzzle or something. I remember one, it was like we just had to make like a 3-minute video about something on campus. Like that was the prompt or something. And what we ended up landing on was like that you can check out 99 books from the library. Like that was the max for an undergrad. So then we just did this video of this dude finding 99 books and checking them out. And it ended up be and I ended up running into this like weird guy I know, and he became a character in the thing, and it was like really funny and fun and delightful. And so I like that sort of like narrow because it made you think of creative ideas. As far as like having like, ooh, I would love to do this instead. Like, I did take a documentary filmmaking class within like the journalism school, and I had a bit of opportunity to kind of like think bigger or whatever. And that was a really rewarding, albeit challenging experience.
Do you think this helps you later on when you're making like petroleum boogie?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, like I love video editing. And I just found it like really, I mean, helping with poetry too. Like I like editing. I like just like, you know, tinkering like that sort of like, ooh, like make this small change, how's that effect? And just repeating, like iterating or whatever over and over and over. But yeah, with Petroleum Boogie, yeah, I just use Audacity for the most part. There's a couple other audio programs I use, but like Audacity felt very natural to me. And I think it felt so natural to me because I had this ex pretty extensive experience with like, some, I think it was Avid was the name of the video editing software that we used at the time.
I was gonna ask, in the room that you're in right now, there's like little booklets or s things taped to the wall. Are those like chat books?
No, I do have some chat books like here, but
Oh, you have Ashley Obscura's book.
no, that's not it. It has a similar like aesthetic,
Oh,
but
it does.
I do have that book. I love her writing. She's a very cool person. No, this is just little decorations. Like there's a postcard that my mom got me from one of her travels. There's a postcard from this town in Arizona that a friend of mine is from. There's a weird like picture, a drawing of like a marionette that some guy like had in his office when he was moving. We changed buildings recently because the old English building's getting treated for asbestos.
Ooh.
So yeah, this guy was like, "If you want anything from my office, you can have it." I just took this weird clown marionette drawing. So
So
yeah, some shit like that.
you're talking about your mom. How was growing up like?
Pretty good. I don't know. I mean,
Is she getting fights?
I was interesting enough, I was talking very in depth about this with someone recently. Not really. I can recall one incident where I like pushed a kid and kind of like kicked him once. And he like was really hurt by that. Like not so much physically. He just like like it really hurt his feeling. I mean, I think it hurt physically too, but like it really upset him, I guess would be a better word. And so yeah, that I can only think of that one time that happened. I experienced a fair amount of like play that veered into bullying. I was very small was the thing. I was like significantly smaller than most of my classmates for pretty much the entire time I was a elementary school student, middle school student, and high school student. So yeah, I wasn't really the first person you'd want on your team if you were having a fight. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. My childhood was kind of a mixed bag. I like my family a lot. They're lovely people, and I really am fond of them. And I had a lot of relatives that were around and shit. But yeah, school was kind of hard, and I was kind of a weird kid, and I had a hard time fitting in, and I kind of hated myself, I guess. So I don't know. It's weird because I've had a nice life in many ways, but I've also had a miserable life in many ways, and sometimes that contradiction confuses me.
Where's the miserable stuff in it?
It's just like depression and shit, you know, just like wanting to die, like being the type of person that, you know, drinks yourself into oblivion, just that type of stuff. It just like generates a lot of, it's like already sort of depressive tendencies just exacerbated by addictive tendencies. And then just, I don't know. I mean, I was really suicidal like for a very long time, and that was
dang, dude.
Really hard.
So who introduced you to alcohol?
Wow. a friend of mine named Chris. Yeah, no, he was like, I remember it. He was like, you got to try it once, man. Like, even if you don't like it, like it's worth trying out. But yeah, he kind of like, he like pilled me on it before I drank. He was sort of the one to convince me to like go to a party and try it out. And then the first time I ever like had a drink, there's these two guys. One of them was named Cody and the other was named Jesse. And they're pouring me shots. They're kind of like fucking with me, like lying to me, like make me think that something would be good when it was terrible, like having a kind of hoot of a time, you know, screwing with me. And yeah, I remember them, I was at a friend's house. I remember sitting at like his little table, it's like island thing, and then pouring terrible shots of like tequila and vodka.
How old were you at this time?
I was 15.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, so you're from like Tulsa?
Yeah.
I'm from like a really small town, and I don't know. I feel like there's probably some vibe overlap between like a city and a state like Oklahoma and the small town I'm from, but like yeah, a lot of people start drinking in like 6th grade, 7th grade. Like it was pretty common for like, and not just like bad kids, like regular kids, like just started getting fucked up like pretty early on. So yeah, I was actually kind of late to the game as far as it went, with my classmates and shit.
Yeah, I think I avoided that. I had a group of friends in like fifth or sixth grade, and we'd go down to this little drainage ditch, and they'd like be smoking cigarettes, and they asked me if I wanted one. I was like, nah, I'm good on that. And then like I remember like later I like lost like the friendship with them, and they did go on to like drink and do other things. I'm not saying they're bad people or anything. I'm just giving my experience. But yeah. I would agree with you.
Yeah, I vibe with what you're saying. I definitely had like a sort of multiple personality social life where like I had these like more like Christian-y skater friends. I had these like druggy fuck up friends. I had like my theater, like to do plays friends. It was kind of like a different person in every group.
And I think I kind of, why I avoided that too is because my mom, she was or is an alcoholic, and I'd see her go to like AA meetings, and I'd like go to her to an AA meeting and be in the back like playing with like little shitty toys, and I like, oh, I need to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who have had similar experiences. I have a lot of addicts in my family, but my dad drank, and he, you know, was a gainfully employed, nice person or whatever. So I sort of had it in my mom, she doesn't drink much, but like she'd have a drink here and there. So I sort of had it in my mind, like my parents drink, it's fine for me to drink. I didn't really sort of understand that, like, the fact that my uncles were ruined by drinking, like, could be bad for me. And I don't know, I feel like sometimes I'm like, I wish you guys would have told me that, but sometimes you can't really be told certain things, you really have to experience them.
So after that, when you first started drinking, were you only doing it when you're like hanging out with your friends?
Yeah,
I
it's
would
so
assume.
uncomfortable for me. I never got into like just like having a fucking drink to like to start the day. That was never my thing. I always drank heavily to extreme excess with people. And like after everyone passed out, I would drink alone. But and you know, I'd have like a beer or something like if it was like I was gonna be partying later. So, you know, like it wasn't like I wanna overstate it, but yeah, for the most part it was a completely social thing.
Yeah, I've done that at points earlier where it's like I'm hanging out with these people. I know I'm only going to be doing this once, and so I will heavily drink and get drunk as a sort of spectacle to like entertain them. And I still do that from time to time, but it's only like once every 6 months or once a year. And I feel like that's a fine way to go, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I have dreams where that exact scenario unfolds, where I'm
Really?
like, I'm just getting drunk this once for the first time in like 2.5 years. I'm gonna get like super wasted, but it's fine because like it's just a periodic thing. It's not like controlling my life anymore. So yeah, that last bit diverges from your experience that you just described, but yeah, I love partying. I love getting fucked up. Like it was the fucking best. And I still think I have very mixed feelings about it, but a big part of me thinks very fondly of it. So yeah, I feel you on that being like an occasionally delightful, strange thing to do or whatever.
So when did it become an issue? Just like the depression and everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing with booze is that like if you're drinking it heavily consistently for years, it starts like fucking change your brain and shit. So yeah, I think like when I started, maybe I was just like a fucking, you know, just another kid or something. Like I might have been a little more anxious than that. I don't really know, but yeah, when I was in my like it was like I mean, I don't know, I could go deep into it. Like I remember like the third time I drank, I got like blackout drunk and puked everywhere. You know what I'm saying? So like
Whoa.
that was like a problem. I felt fucked up about it very early on. And there was a time when I was in high school that I got really, really, really drunk and urinated all over a friend's house and made like a complete fool of myself. And his parents, like, they didn't like fully banish me, but like they like hated me, you know what I'm saying? And yeah, after that I felt this incredible shame, and I did quit drinking for like a year and a half or something. This was like 17 to like 19 or something like that. And then in college I started drinking again, and then like I was pretty locked into like I love drinking, even if it fucks shit up, even if it causes some problems, like I still think it's fun, so I'm gonna do it anyways. And it wasn't until like my mid 20s that I don't know, it started to feel really, really, really unsustainable. And I just like this shit would start happening where I just like start weeping in the middle of the day. Like just this like really ever present fog of stress and misery. It was just like just getting darker and darker. So yeah, I don't know. It's like in my sort of early mid 20s was when I started to like feel really, really bad. And I continued drinking for like another 2 or 3 years or four even. And then, yeah, then I eventually quit.
Why did you pee all over the guy's house? Like, could you not find a bathroom?
I have no recollection of this incident, you know, like I was really, I mean, that night was like, I mean, like, again, I have very little memory of any of it, but like, I don't know, it's kind of crazy, but like, I was taken by people and thrown in the back of their truck, and then they took me somewhere and they like wrote homophobic slurs on my body and shit like that, and then they just like threw me in someone's lawn. Like I think my like neighbor across the street, they just like threw me in their lawn to like be done with me. And then my friend, who I have a lot of love for, and I'm so grateful that he did this. He heard about this and he found me and he like took me to his home. And then that's when I started like urinating. Like so yeah, it's just like because I was like alcohol poisoning. It wasn't like I was like being a chaos agent or something like that.
Oh,
Although I
damn.
would do chaotic shit, but that, yeah, pissing on things to cause chaos was not my MO.
So, like, who are these assholes that like threw you in their truck and wrote shit on you?
I don't know. It's just like
Was it like bullies that you had known? Or was it like random people?
it's like this weird fine line where like these like some there's some people who are like more bully figures in my life. There's people who are more friends in my life. It's just like I don't know what your experience of it being a young man is, but like when my experience of being a young man is like once the group starts going in a direction, it quickly becomes like this sort of boulder rolling down the hill that can't be stopped. So then like the first thing you do is just like push the guy when he's wasted and like have a laugh about that, and then it can just like lead to these fucked up. And I was never like party to like really like hate crime. I mean, I don't want to say it's a hate crime, but like that type of like, I was never party anything like that. But like that's sort of weird, especially when you have alcohol in the mix. That sort of logic, like I understand how it works, and it's very like diabolical or whatever. But yeah, yes, people I knew, and like some of them were people that I didn't like. Some of them were people that I did, and yeah.
Did you get retribution?
No, I guess no is the answer. Although, like, I don't know. I didn't feel, I guess probably because I don't remember it. I didn't feel, I don't know. I guess I never thought. There are people that have hurt me that I have wished to hurt back, but
Revenge.
it's never been related to that particular incident, even though it was an incredibly significant moment in my life.
So the turning point was a relationship that you had and broke up with someone, I believe.
So yeah, we kind of touched on so basically like I had a girl that I met in college, and I loved her, and we got along great, like we had a really good thing. But yeah, I don't know, basically like yeah, I just get real jealous, and when I get drunk I would just like say shit to her about like, why did you have a Facebook chat with this guy or something? Just like anything she did that like could in any way be like an object of jealousy. I would just like, if I was wasted, I'd find a way to just like dwell on it and be kind of shitty to her. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, that was a whole, I mean, I'm still friends with this person, and she's a great person who I'm very fond of. I'm very grateful for her presence in my life, and she helped me change in many ways, and I'm very lucky to have had a real relationship with such a compassionate and wonderful person. But like but yeah, I mean it was a weird long up and down ordeal. It's kind of hard to super condense. But yeah, the end point was like, man, I really fucked this thing up. And it was because I was being a drunk, jealous asshole, and that seems bad, and I don't want to do that anymore. It was part of my like changing process for sure.
So when you get jealous now, do you catch yourself and you interrogate yourself like, whoa, what's going on here? Let's like rewind, let's slow down.
I mean, I don't really get jealous, particularly like in any way, even similar. Like it's like almost like a. Like I have a phobia of it or something. Like the idea of being jealous, I just associate with being miserable. So I just like, I don't know. It's one of those real things where like you go through a lot of painful experience, and it can like fundamentally transform you in a way that you never would have expected. So yeah, I mean, like I'll have little moments where I'm like, ooh, like it's more like insecurity. Like I might feel insecure in a moment. And then I just, yeah, I do kind of like recognize it as such and like disentangle it from like whatever I might be projecting onto whatever. So there's little moments like that, but they're very small and they're very manageable. And it's more just insecurity, and it could happen about anything, not just jealousy.
That'd be great if like I could like not be insecure. Like it was just something you could easily get rid of, but it's not. It's like it just stays with you your whole life and you gotta like work with it.
Yep, it's a real motherfucker.
Does it like has it come in with your writing? Have you ever feel like you're not confident enough to put something out or do a project that you wanted to do?
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a lot of thoughts on that one. I don't know. I've never felt insecure as a poet writing poems. I've always felt like my poems are cool and I'm doing something that's like my own thing. And, if it's turning people on, then that means I'm onto something. You know what I mean? So like, and it wasn't like I was always writing poems that were like exciting people. Like, that's definitely not the case. But I was into my own shit enough. I have a certain, like, it's not arrogance, but it's just like, I don't know. I really like creative self-expression. Like, I just love it. Like, I think it's so great. And when I can say something that's real, I feel this like it's a kind of intoxicating feeling. So yeah, with my writing of poems, I've always felt pretty good about, yeah, like asserting myself or just like being a poet or whatever. When it comes to like projects and stuff like that, that becomes like more of like a sort of social dance. And yeah, my insecurity as a social creature within like a milieu has definitely caused me to not do things or do things a way that, I don't know, doesn't make sense. I don't know. There's definitely been a lot of times where like, yeah, weird insecurities fuck my ability to pursue. Like, currently, for instance, I've done a lot of like comedy shit in the recent years, and so I do like improv shows in Omaha, and for like a year and a half, I've wanted to like get a group together and have like a weekly rehearsal. But like whenever I think about like setting that into motion, I'm just like, I asked that guy, like he's probably got something else going on, like and these kind of weird insecure feelings just start to like pop up, and they do like debilitate me. So like I'm not doing this thing that I would like to do. So that's like one example, but there's countless examples of, yeah, like social angst and insecurity fucking with my artistry on in some way. I still do a lot of stuff that I'm excited about and proud of, and it's not like it's completely debilitating. Like, I've done a lot of cool shit with people, but it's been painful to me. But at the same time, yeah, there is stuff that I haven't done because of that.
Do you feel like you have to bully yourself a little bit in order to like ask this one guy to do the rehearsal thing?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. There's two pieces of it. One piece is like, I think one of the way my anxiety manifests is like I get really vigilant, like trying to come up with like a perfect plan or something like that. So I'll just like kind of obsessively think about like, okay, if I am to do this, like what is the way to, and I could just like, where do I want the rehearsal to be? How am I gonna find that space? Like, what's a weird, like, I don't want just like the same old people. Like, I want a weird mix of people. Like, how do I like account for all these different things? Like, I just dwell on them, and then that can be like a comforting diversion that replaces doing. So yeah, that's one part. But I feel like I forgot part of what you said. But yeah.
So when you're like, when you find like Jack Spicer, were you still drinking or had you gotten off by that point?
I was still drinking. Yeah, no, and his drinking, him being like a, yeah. I mean, I read his biography. He's a fucked up person, and like, I've sort of like, I still like have a lot of love for him and his poems, but I've sort of like turned on him as I've gotten older because I'm kind of projecting my own fucked upness onto him. But yeah, no, I was drinking heavily, and yeah, I was into it. I was into him being this like fucking like maniac guy who would like one of the sort of a famous Jack, or it's not, I don't know if it's famous, but like an interesting kind of Jack Spicer anecdote is when he met the poet Charles Olson, he was like fucking wasted, and he loved Olson, he revered him, and he like kneeled before him and then like took a tarot deck out of his pocket and just started like trying to do a tarot reading like on the spot. And Olson just like, what the f who the fuck are you, and just like fucking like stormed away, and it like broke Spicer's heart. So yeah, that type of like reckless weirdo vibe I thought was kind of amazing, and I was into it.
He overthought the meeting and just like pulled out some weird shit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he really thought that he was gonna kneel before Charles Olson and give him an impromptu tarot reading, and it was gonna like go off like fucking gangbusters and like what?
Have you ever met someone like you revered and you totally fucked it up in your head?
That's a good question. Two stories come to mind. The first time I ever went to an AWP conference, I wasn't like affiliated in any way, and it was in Chicago. And the night before, I went to a reading with the poet Ariana Rines. I always forget how to say it, but yeah, she's a badass poet, has books on fence and shit. But I'd seen her do this reading, and then the next day I was like walking to somewhere and she was like walking right next to me, and I felt so like starstruck and like, I don't know, just this like butterflies kind of feeling. And I didn't say anything to her, so I don't know, it's not like I fucked anything up, but it was like, you know, I could have definitely like turned to her and said hello, and like, you know, who knows, like maybe we would have gotten along swimmingly, who the fuck knows. But when I met the other poet I mentioned, Alice Notley, in Boise, Idaho.
Wow.
And I remember asking her a question after the reading. I asked her, like, how should a poet be as a person in the world? Or something like extremely like vague and grandiose like that. And then she like sort of answered in a kind of bemused way. And I felt really stupid. And then afterwards, I gave her this poem. I have a poem that I wrote called The Prophet, which I wrote after her poem, which is also called The Prophet. And yeah, I felt like with the combo of me asking this weird question and me giving her this poem, it just made me look like a complete fucking moron. But that's like, I'm just making that up, you know what I mean?
What was her response when you gave her the poem?
She smiled and sort of like, I don't know, she was like grateful, but I don't know, like it was sort of like, it was like, you've given me this thing, now you can walk away. Like that was sort of the vibe, you know what I mean? Like she wasn't trying to like sit down and have a coffee with me to talk about, like, it was just like, cool man, that's nice, this has happened to me before, and like let's split. So yeah, I don't know, she was very like kind, but yeah, there's no like connection at all.
Have you ever met like a poet you looked up to and you just asked like a banger question and afterwards you're like, yeah, I fucking nailed that?
I got a good story for this one. I saw the poet Matthew Zapruder do a reading in Omaha, and I just noticed that like he talked about light bulbs a lot, like he, like light bulb as a metaphor, as a visual motif, it just kept popping up. So yeah, I asked him like, I noticed that you're really interested in light bulbs, why are you so interested in light bulbs? And he like, it kind of like, it fucked with his head. He was like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, he thought I was like maybe making fun of her or something, but I wasn't. Like, I was genuinely like, because I have weird shit that I just kind of like always come back to. It's just like in my imaginary, it's just lodged there for whatever reason. But yeah, it really like bugged him. And then afterwards, I had a friend who went to this college that he had taught at the time or something. So afterwards, I went up to him and sort of did the name drop thing. Hey, we have a mutual friend in common. And then he's like, oh, that's cool that you know this person, because you're that fucking guy that asked that weird light bulb question, aren't you? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And then later we went to like the, and my buddy sort of infiltrated the, like, I'm sure you've had this experience where like the visiting writer is there, and then all the sort of muckety mucks from the department sort of take them away to like a dinner or some bullshit.
Yeah.
So me and my friend, like, we just went to that, even though like we weren't part of the muckety muck club or whatever. And then, yeah, he continued to like express sort of buggedness and disease about my asking him this fucking weird light bulb question. But then his next book that came out, there's like a passage from it on the back, and it was like the last two lines are like, and the light bulb explodes and like da da da. I was just like, that's right, motherfucker. Like even your fucking editors know that you're obsessed with fucking light bulbs, dog. So yeah, I felt pretty proud. I love that anecdote, and I always feel myself when I get into it and think about it. So yeah, that was one. It wasn't like a banger question where I was like really offering up like a brilliant trenchant insight or anything, but I do feel good about that one.
That's terrific that like you asked the poet a question and like he couldn't get it off his mind, and like it would bother him that much. Like, that would be perfect, I think.
No,
especially
cool.
for a poet who's like always, you know, thinking. Have you run into him since?
I don't think so. I mean, no, I guess not. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was unusual. So yeah, I'd seen it. I've seen him do reading twice. I think those are the only two times. He came to Lincoln when I first started being interested in poetry, and he did this reading at Omaha through the University of Nebraska Omaha. But yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen him again since then.
If you ever do see him, you need to bring that book and then just point to the line, like, light bulb.
I bet he might remember that shit. Because, yeah, he talked to my buddy and I for a while. Like, he's cool. Like, he's very, like, gracious and, like, down to shoot the shit with us about poems. I don't know. It's sort of like the story kind of makes him look like a goofball or something. But, like, I admire him. I think he's a great poet. But, and he was cool. Like, he was very gracious and willing to connect with us in a meaningful way. But yeah, it was always funny to me that I sort of fucked with his head a little bit.
What's the last like reading you've gone to that you personally like loved and you took something away from it? Why is Omaha a big like place where people go and like read?
Nah. I'll sort of rant about that and then I'll answer your question about the last reading. So there's Lincoln and there's Omaha, and Lincoln's the college town and Omaha's like the bigger city, and they're like 45 minutes apart from each other. Lincoln is this like constant ebb and flow because it's a university town, so everyone's like a transient figure. Like, there's, it's hard for like a rooted community to really exist, and to the extent that such a thing like that can, the people that you're like doing weird poetry shit with when you're 24, maybe they're not gonna be so into that when you're 36. So I've had this experience of kind of like becoming this weird like elder figure, this like desert father guy, because like there's a certain, it's not always the case, but like some weird 23-year-old kid is like probably more likely to be jazzed about poetry and get like super into it and like set up readings, do all the fucking weird legwork, than like someone who's working a fucking full-time job and like has a kid or some shit, you know what I mean? So Lincoln is this weird kind of spot where like it's really sad and kind of brutal, because like everyone you love disappears, and those that don't, like, you know, life just changes, and I felt very sort of lonely as a poet in Lincoln many times. However, the flip of that is people just pop up out of nowhere, and they're brilliant, and they're amazing, and they're beautiful, and they're cool, and all of a sudden you just have this like energy that's just like contributing to your life, and like the only reason this person's there is because like who the fuck knows, like they just randomly showed up at the University of Nebraska for some fucking reason. So yeah, I don't know, Lincoln's a real like double-edged sword or whatever. With Omaha, I lived there from like 08 to 2014 or something, and during much of that time I was still a very active poet in Lincoln. Like, the writers group that I was doing and continue to do was in Lincoln. But yeah, I don't know, we started doing stuff in Omaha, and there's just like more like bars and art galleries and like random places that were just like game to have fucking poems and shit going on. So yeah, there's definitely it felt easier to create sort of a vibe or a scene that like had a certain cool factor to it in the Omaha context than it did in Lincoln. Like, Lincoln were a lot more, it's a more intimate type of thing. It's more like these monks who are doing this like cool thing in private, and we like, I mean, I've, don't get me wrong, like we got a lot of really beautiful cool reads in Lincoln, but yeah, there's something about Omaha where like we could just like, I don't know, just kind of put something on and it would be like kind of a blast, and we could get people's attention and stuff, whereas in Omaha or in Lincoln it was always just like we are gathering to sort of like share with each other a more like distilled version of the stuff that we share with each other all the time anyways.
Do you think that's why you found the internet, like, so you found the internet community, I guess?
Yeah, that's definitely part. I mean, yeah, it's I haven't thought about this. I used to think about this a lot. Like, when I started interfacing Vault Lit as just a spectator, I felt this fear about it, that like my interest in this type of thing was going to be perceived as like stupid or something to my real poetry friends in Lincoln or whatever, and that was like a ridiculous assumption. Like, this was completely rooted in my very bizarre like insecurities or whatever. But But yeah, and for a very long time, I don't do this anymore, but I used to like be, I mean, I alluded to this earlier. I even directly talked about it. Like, I was a very like separate lives person. Like, this is my this life. And I didn't like any sort of overlap. Like, it really, the thought of like someone that I went to parties with in high school could see, could ever interact with someone that I wrote poems with, that was like terrifying to me. Now I love like cross-pollination or whatever. Like, I think it's the fucking best, but that's been a work in progress. But yeah, so like, so yeah, there's definitely the internet, the alt-lit scene, my whole world. It was very like, it was like a secret excitement that I was super interested in. And I felt like it was this thing that I could just kind of be privately obsessed with or something. But then, yeah, as social media started to build, I just kind of, like, I mean, you've been interacting with Justin on Twitter. Like, he joined Twitter, and then like, he joined Tumblr, and then like, this is my poet friend in LinkedIn. And then we're both doing, I mean, we had done stuff on the internet, on Facebook a lot, like, but we started interacting with the broader world through this like internet thing. And yeah, I don't know. There's, this is really ramble, but like, the things that drew me to alt-lit were like, one, just like the style of it, just like the directness that people had. Like, I just love that people just would really just like sing their hearts out or whatever. I just love that. It was so intoxicating. And then, but then, the, but like, but I wasn't like enamored of these writers. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't revere these people. Like, most of the, like, there's like two names that come to mind off the top of my head. There's probably a few more as like great writers who I would deem alt-lit. You know what I mean? So it's not like I was like, oh, this is, it was like the way that they were interacting with poetry and being poets through this social access or whatever. I thought it was so cool and exhilarating. So yeah, I loved it as a social phenomenon more so than I loved it as a creative thing. 'Cause yeah, like I love art, you know what I mean? It, like, I love all art. I love all poems. Like, it's something that I believe in, but like, to really like blow my hair back, it doesn't happen every day, you know what I mean? So yeah, like, it was more just kind of being amazed by the social aspects of it.
So, did you start publishing an alt-lit like mags?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the first magazine I ever submitted to and ever got published in was called New Wave Vomit, and that's a honesty mag that she ran. Incredible mag. I think about it often. She had a thing in her submission guidelines that was like, it was like, here's the regular guidelines. Like, number four, say something nice to me. I am a human being. And it was just like so beautiful. And yeah, I sent her a poem I wrote. I felt extremely anxious about publishing it. I remember asking her to put it under a fake name. And I asked her to make up a name. And then she was like, I don't know what name to. And then she just like took a name from the poem and made that my fake name. So yeah, it was really cool. So yeah, that was the first time I ever, other than like, I guess I published in like a undergrad journal at the university. But yeah, the first time I ever sent something to like an editor that I had no basis with was an alt-lit mag for sure.
Were you worried about how you would be like you, earlier you said, like perceived? Because there was definitely a perception, like at OSU, that a lot of people, they hated New York or like the New York scene because they thought New York saw like Oklahoma as a just a flyover state. And like that, like perception, like was in like the whole like English department. And it took me a while to realize, like, dude, no one in New York is ever going to be thinking of me. Or Oklahoma, like, why do I hate these people? And the more I looked into it, it's like I really dig like these young kids doing what they want to do and making it, doing like everything I was kind of taught like not to do, like they did. And I thought that was so badass. And so I did. I also kept it like as a secret. I had like a secret account where like interact with just alt-lit people.
See, I was done with undergrad when I really started getting serious about writing poems and shit. So it was like we were doing our own thing. Like, I sometimes in the past I've ever stated this, like, we made it up, like we figured out how to be poets all on our own. Like, we were kids that went to college and took creative writing classes in college. You know what I mean? It wasn't some like sui generis like thing, but like we did just kind of do our own thing. And like what we were doing, what me and Justin started and what a bunch of people ended up doing with us was like separate from the university completely. And like anytime I try to bring university people into it, They'd be like, I don't want to sit around and talk about poems on Saturday. Like, fuck you. I'd just be like, why not? Like, are you studying poetry? Like, is it not the fit? So it's always like, so yeah, I don't know. Because of that, like, kind of odd resistance, I was just like, oh, like, university people are fucking bullshit. So, like, yeah. Like, I don't care what they think. And now I work at the university in the English department. I'm not a professor, but it's changed since then. My boss, like, this badass dude or whatever. But yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of weird peculiarities that made me, one, completely unfazed by any, like, shade that someone in the poetry community here might throw on something that I'm interested in. But then at the same time, like, I also have always never felt ashamed about being from Nebraska as a poet, like, mingling in these, like, coastal circles or whatever. Like, I've always kind of viewed it as, like, I don't know, it's corny to say this, but like, it's like a superpower or something like that. And it's just like fun to be this like fucking guy from the middle of nowhere who can just like, you know, show up at a reading and light the shit on fire. And yeah, I remember this time, there's this phase after I quit drinking where I did drugs, psychedelic drugs, like regularly. I was in New York for the first time in my life and I was completely fucking gonzo on Molly and acid. And I was with like Stephen Tully Durst, who like would get canceled like 4 months later for like he set off the whole like alt lit reckoning or whatever. And he like made some crack about me being from Nebraska, and I just like I was like so high, and I just was riding this like perfect wave and being like perfectly high. I just like very casually said like, "You're probably from Michigan or some shit, dude. Like everyone's from nowhere or something." Just like some like pithy statement like that, and everyone in the group was like, "Wow!" Like they just like it was like inadvertently like sick comeback. And there's a couple other kind of experiences where I was like, oh, it's kind of cool to be from fucking nowhere. Yeah, like it's kind of awesome. And yeah, so I've always felt, I don't know, it's just kind of a weird random combination of happenstance, but yeah, I've always felt pretty good about like who I am, where I'm from, and like how that connects to the larger world of stuff.
Could you see that that guy was like an ass?
Yeah definitely, yeah. I mean, I don't know, I don't want to like, I don't want to say like I knew, you know, like it wasn't, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't want to like slander anyone or anything, but like there was a few things that keyed me into him being an ass. One was I was talking to Rachel Bell, who I had met previously in Chicago, and he like looked at me sort of angrily. And then he like came up to me and was being like very buddy buddy with me. And that was like a very frat guy move. Like I just knew that was a frat guy move. Not like frat guys or frat guy moves. So yeah, and then there was another time when I was hanging out with my friend Val, who's a poet from New York, who randomly did a reading at Lincoln, and we connected this time I was in New York. And the next day, he was like, "Did you fuck that girl last night? Like, did you fuck that girl?" And I was like, "Nah, man." And he's like, "Oh, you fucked her." Like, and that's a very frat guy kind of like, just like, you know, rote misogyny type of bro-ish thing that like often indicates that someone's a shithead. So yeah, I mean, like, I did not like him or find him to be like a trustworthy or admirable person, but you know, I don't want to say that like I knew or anything like that, you know, like I didn't I don't know. Now I think about like, okay, two more things. One more, so like he, I can't remember the specifics of it, but like it was like 2 months prior to him getting canceled, someone like called out his mag Pop Cereal for like, I don't know, like only publishing the cool kids or something like that. Like a kind of like vague gatekeepery type of critique, which like, you know, I vibe with that. Like I don't like gatekeepers, and I think it sucked. So then he had to, it must have gotten like 60 notes on Tumblr or something like that, because he had to like, he came up with a response. I remember his response was like, he said in his response that he does publish, he's like, "I do publish women who I am sexually attracted to, but there's nothing wrong with that," or something like that. Like, I was like, it's not verbatim, but like he expressed that thought directly in the thing. And I almost like quoted it on Tumblr or whatever and like talk shit, but then I didn't do that. And I felt like a coward at the time. And then when stuff started to like pop up, I was like, I really should have fucking I really should have called him out in that like moment or whatever, but I didn't. So yeah, I don't know. I guess there were definitely vibes from him that were emanating that were bad.
Jesus Christ, that's insane that you would like even say that on like an apology.
Truly, it wasn't apology. Like he wasn't. The call out was like more like about like standards and practices rather than like litigating a wrong or trying to right a wrong. So yeah, it was more of like a trying to clarify the editorial purpose of the journal. But then to say something so like skeezy,
Yeah, I feel like
yeah.
the fall of alt-lit would be like people having power, and they because they were like anti-establishment initially, and then once they become a sort of establishment, that's the fall.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think about this all the time because pretty much every arts scene that has a youth culture connected to it, which is many art scenes, is going to be a magnet for predators. And, you know, it's my view that the larger arts industries are predatory in and of themselves. So it's just kind of like reproducing, you know, and we live in a fucked up society or whatever. So yeah, but the way the art scenes often become really toxic and fucked up is it's a huge problem that I think about all the time. And yeah, it was definitely a problem in all of it.
What other scenes do you know of that like have predatory behavior? I guess like all of them, but what
Yeah, I
you
mean that's every scene has predators and predatory behavior and some sort of predatory reckoning. Like every scene that I've witnessed or interacted with, and in the poetry community that I'm a part of, there was a predatory person who did predatory shit to someone, and yeah, it was fucked up.
who was it?
I'm not gonna go into the specifics of that,
Yeah.
but yeah, it was, I don't know, it was quite a while ago, but yeah, it was a guy. It was just a guy that was really fucked up the women.
I see it that from time to time where people, because if you bring them up, there's backlash against you, I guess, too, you know? I've seen
I
that.
mean, the thing that makes it really hard
It's just
is,
stressful to out like, oh, this person, and like you, it comes back on you and shit, and you just don't want to, you want to go into that, you know?
it's like a power thing is the whole basis of, you know, so like these people often accumulate a lot of like, I mean, it's the blueprint, you know, like they accumulate power so they can do fucked up shit and get away with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is like challenging to, but then at the same time, there's also a lot of like intimacy and emotionality and shared experience and shit like that wrapped up in everything. And sometimes like people are being victimized, like don't feel as though, you know, there's just so much like our human lives and our interactions with one another are so complicated. So like even if someone's like objectively doing fucked up shit, you know, it becomes a lot foggier when you get into the specifics of how the actual people actually involved actually interact with it. And then it's really hard to know what the right choice is. And sometimes there isn't the right choice.
Sometimes you see professors and they have a lot of complaints against them, and like they're just still at their fucking job and no one's like doing anything about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a, yeah. I'm not aware of anything like that I've ever seen, but yeah, that's a huge problem. And I don't know if it's getting better or if it's just like mutating into something else.
What do you feel is your most powerful poem?
Wow. What a wonderful question.
The last one? Oh.
Dude, that's funny. There's a poet I've, they've like become a genderqueer person. FKA Marshall Malika, they released a rap record like years and years ago. But they have this line in that record that's like the best poet alive lives in exile, or wait, the best rapper alive lives in exile, and a poet is only as good as her last line. And yeah, I always found that to be a very like awesome formulation or whatever. But yeah, I don't know, the most powerful poem. It's definitely not the last poem I wrote, whatever like that is. Yeah, I don't know. I guess the one that comes to mind is I wrote a poem called Nerves. It's like a list poem, and each line starts with the words call me. So the first line is call me nerves. And it's like 2 pages. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah, poem meant a lot to me. So I don't know. That's a random answer, but yeah.
One of the things I related to while listening to your Petroleum like Boogie podcast was you were talking about wanting to make a movie and how you've always wanted to make a movie, but you've never like sat down and looked at the processes of how to make one, and you kind of went off on this like rant about it, and it was like really beautiful to me. And like, I was like, yeah, we need to make a fucking movie. I'm like, I'm not gonna make one, but that's what I related to that.
I really appreciate you saying that. That really means a lot to me. Yeah, I mean, I think about it all the time. And you know, I know there's people in our in the scene, in the community, like Lou Chariot, like these are people who are like interested. I mean, one of the Catch Fest, they had like kind of a little mini film festival of, as well as like queer people like screening these weird movies that they'd made on Catch's, like on a sheet, like next to Catch's garage or something like that. So there's a bit of that energy, but yeah, I've always felt like, man, we could really do something cool if like we combined our energies in a fun, exciting way for everyone. But then like that's, there's a lot of coordination. There's like, I don't know. It's still kind of a mystery to me. But yeah, I hope to get over that
fear. Are you going to the next Catch Fest?
Probably. You know, who knows? But I've been to the Catch Fest.
Well, I feel like them. If you wrote a script and you got the people that went to that, you could probably put something together and make a small short.
Yeah, that's film. An interesting idea. Yeah, like sort of leveraging like sort of Catch Fest as the backdrop for this like mumblecore style film or something like that. Yeah, that is a cool idea. And that would probably work. It'd be fun.
I
love it.
I feel like you could get Theo involved. I bet he would be down for that.
Yeah. I mean, Theo's an actor. Like, Theo's done some pretty cool work in that.
Has he? He's acted?
Yes. Yes. I can't remember the name of the film. But yeah, I've talked to Theo about acting. I mean, Theo has such an incredible face, you know. So, like, this is a visual object or whatever, Theo. So, like, amazing. But, like, such a great smile. Like, so much about. Big eyes. A lot of great actors have huge fucking eyes. So there's just a lot of physicality that I think is well suited for the lights. But yeah, I remember one time I got on some weird call with like seven people while I was like driving. I just like got this notification. I just like joined this weird Facebook group call or something, and they were talking about some movie that they were in. Yeah.
What call was it?
I can't remember. It was just like.
Like years ago?
Yeah, it was like 2019 or 2018 or something. Yeah, the only person I remember being on the call other than Theo was Ree Chang, who's I don't know if they still go by Ree Chang, but they're a poet from, they're still on Twitter. I can't remember their Twitter. It's like an alien ate you or something like that. Like an alien ate you, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah, they were, I think they're from KC, Kansas City. And they did a reading in Omaha one time. And I did a reading with them in KC one time too at my friend Alex's house. But I don't know them. I don't know like a ton about their life. But yeah, Ree Chang was on that call as well as Theo.
Do you want to talk about Rachel Bell, who dislikes me? Though I had tried to invite her on, but she doesn't. I guess she doesn't want to come on.
What'd she say when you asked?
She didn't say anything. She didn't respond. But like you and Catch wanted her to be on here. I was like, I'll have her on. I have her book. Austin gave me all his books and like her books in there.
Okay. So
I have no ill feelings against her. So I don't really know who she is.
If I'm going to be Rachel's like attorney right now, which I decided that's what I'm going to be. She's kind of not an alt-lit person anymore. Like she's kind of like, moved on to other things. It's sort of in the past for her. Like she has a pretty serious career. She does a lot of cool like influencer adjacent type of stuff. Like I don't know, like I could see her not wanting to kind of go into this like chapter of her life that is no longer central, even though she's still friends and close with, has a lot of love for a lot of alt-lit people. Like that's kind of my theory of like, If I'm entering the mind of Rachel and trying to divine why she doesn't want to do your podcast, that would be my assessment. But
I think that's kind of one of the reasons around the podcast is a lot of people have left the alt-lit scene and they've gone on and done maybe more successful, and they've been more successful outside of it. And it is. That is one of the reasons, like, I want to talk to people like that to see, like, if they got things from the scene and they took, like, important things they learned from the scene, being around and in the scene, and taking on outside of the scene. you know. I did. I went to like Goddess Earth, who formerly known as Gabby Bass, and said she, right now she doesn't want to do like an interview thing, but maybe later on.
Yeah, she's brilliant, and she's a prime example of what you're talking about. Someone who sort of, I don't know. I don't want to speak on what she does with her creative. With her creative power, because it's substantial and she does really cool shit. But like I personally, when I look at all of the cool shit that she did back in the day as an alt-lit person and continues to do it as a kind of like a spiritual, I don't mean the term pejorative, like an influencer type of person, like I see a continuity. I think it's really incredible, inspiring. So I get I get why that. I mean, I love your interviews. I think they're incredible, and I'd love to hear you listen, talk to anyone basically. But you know, some people just aren't going to want to talk about that stuff for whatever reason.
What's your favorite thing that Rachel Bell like did within the scene?
Wow, what a question, man. Rachel is a real powerhouse.
How'd you meet her?
How did I meet her? Okay, yeah, this is funny. I feel like you'll dig this. I did a reading in Austin, Texas that the villain Steve Roggenbuck asked me to do. Because he had done a reading in Lincoln and Omaha. We set up two readings for him. They're both very, very, very successful. And then he invited, I told him I was going to be at South by Southwest for work. I was working at this like alt weekly at the time. And they got me a pass. Like they, that's all they did is they got me a pass so I could go to stuff. But he was like, oh, if you're going to be there, I'm setting up a reading you should read at. So then I read this reading. It was a really cool reading. A lot of alt-lit people there who are like, it was very trippy because it was the first time I ever kind of like was sharing space, like actual space with these like internet people. So it's very intimidating and very weird, but very cool. But yeah, no, I ended up feeling very good about it. And this person who was a real like periphery figure in alt-lit, and I can't remember their name even, and they like changed their name to like more of a persona style name, but they invited me to, they like my poems, we had a brief email correspondence, and they invited me to this Facebook group called Eastern Orthodox Erotica, which was a bunch of alt-lit people posting nudes and talking about their sex lives.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no, it was a real like, and it was vibrant. It was like a vibrant Facebook community where like people just were like hella being real about like all kinds of shit. And Rachel was in that group. And I became a person in this community, and I posted, like, I'm doing a reading in Chicago. If anyone from here is in Chicago, we should, like, hang out or something like that. And then Rachel responded to that post. But then she was doing the reading that I was reading at. Like, she also read at the reading because it was at my buddy Carl's house. And Carl's a good friend of mine. Carl's the best. And Carl still lives in Chicago. But Carl at that time was living with another villainous alt-lit figure named Heiko Julian. And yeah, I don't know exactly what the connection between Heiko and Rachel was, but Rachel is very good at like connecting with people and like networking, like for lack of a better word. And yeah, she could identify people who were like influential and like get them to like interface with her in a real way. And yeah, I don't know, like, yeah, so I did this reading with Heiko and Rachel, and that was the first time I ever hung out with Rachel. And then we hung out a lot that weekend. It was really nice.
It's really crazy that there was a group like that. I feel like that would be like pointed out amongst all this controversial stuff that came out.
I mean, it was a pretty like safe space. Like, I mean, I don't know. It's kind
of, it wasn't predatory.
Well, so it was moderated by two women.
Okay.
Like women kind of led the group, you know what I'm saying? Like they were in charge of it. And like I was invited into it. So there were men in the group, but it was mostly women and like some men.
So was it like sex positive?
Kinda. I mean there's different I remember one time there was like a really heated thread where someone was like basically like, I know we're all sex positive here, but like if you ever cheat, you should die or something like that.
Oh my God.
And I remember getting very like heated where people were trying to talk about like the contingencies of shit like that, but this person was obviously coming from like a wounded place or whatever. So yeah, there's some like divergence, but yeah, I'd say overall the vibe was definitely sex positive. Okay. And yeah, people would be posting like fucking pictures of themselves with like jizz all over their tits or something like that. You know what I mean? And like, so yeah, it was, I mean, yeah, there's sexual stuff that was positively accepted or whatever. But yeah, there was a person in that group who was later actually outed himself as a predatory person, named Buttercup. And yeah, I remember I guess the only kind of bad vibes thing I remember from that group was, are you familiar with the term blue balls?
Yes.
So like I remember when I encountered this term, this idea that like if you have a hard dick and then you don't ejaculate, it causes some like horrible pain known as blue balls. And I was always like, I've never experienced this blue balls. Like there has been times where I've had a hard dick and I didn't ejaculate. It's pretty much fine. It's just my dick goes from being hard to not hard. And you know, I sort of like came to believe, and I don't know, there's been people who have tried to push back on this, but like I basically come to believe that like blue balls is like an op, like a patriarchal like misogynist op, where it's just like, hey, if you don't like make a guy nut, like you are like hurting him, and like you are the abuser, like random, you know. And like, and during this, so someone like, I think it was a woman, posted like, is blue balls real? And like and this person who would later out himself as a predator, he was like, he was being very like intellectual about it, but he was like saying yes, like it's very real and like it's a serious thing. And I was just like, eh, most guys that say that seem to come back to me. And then he out himself as a predator. So yeah, there was definitely some like, and you know, some of the people in that, I mean, I don't know, it's kind of heavy to talk about, but two of the people in that group are dead now, you know. And
Whoa, what?
yeah, and
Who?
one of them is named Suzanne.
Okay.
She's a Chicago poet. She used to live with Rachel, and she was the
Fuck.
moderator of that group, I believe. And she's a really sweet person who I feel a lot of fondness for. And then I can't remember the other woman's name, but she was an alt-lit person, sort of on the Facebook scene that I recall being. Yeah, I can't remember. I think Lou knows her better. He could probably remind me. But yeah, she was sort of like roughly the same age as Rachel, and then. And she died more recently than Suzanne, I think.
What happened?
I don't know what happened with her. I know that Suzanne took her own life.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, she had a fucked up life. I mean, she sent me some writing that there was like essays about her life, and yeah, her life was gnarly. Like, yeah,
Yeah,
she
I
went through
could see why
some real
Rachel would
shit.
like probably get out of the scene if one of your roommates or your friends. I don't
I
know.
mean, that this is a large
I don't
timeline
want
to
to
see
say
kind of.
anything for anyone. I don't know Rachel. I don't want her coming after me.
Yeah, I would perhaps edit that speculation out, but like, but yeah, I don't think her. I mean, I don't know, it might have something to do with it, but I don't think her sort of moving on from alt-lit has particularly much to do with like tragic circumstances
That
related
would fuck
to.
you up, though, you know?
For sure, for sure, for sure, definitely. No, I mean, it's really sad. It makes me really sad to think about these people because they're really wonderful people, and it's terrible that they die.
So after Jack Spicer, like what other poets do you find and cling on to and like, this is my guy?
Mean, the other big one was, I mean, my sort of pat answer for this is like my friends, like
Yeah.
my fellow poets here in
But it's
Nebraska.
so true, man.
Those are my true inspirations, and they are, and I do like feel that way legitimately, truly. However, like if I were to say like a name, like the other big kind of name who was like a huge fucking deal to me was the poet Alice Notley, who I had that anecdote about meeting her. So yeah, she was major important figure, and she kind of unlocked a lot, just a lot of strains of poetics and poetry ideas that I don't know, I never accessed before. We're sort of through her or through people, but I relate to her.
Have you edited a magazine?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this a bit in the previous one, but
Yeah.
we did this love book project. So that was 3 years. And the first one, it was like 8 people contributed to it. The second one, like 40 people contributed to it. And the third one, like 115 people contributed to it. And by the third one, it was a really like kind of intense and robust editorial process that a group of us like undertook. And making those books was like a real, it was like we had to have like a They were like, it was like production. Like, we had a little like book factory in the fucking basement of a friend's house. But yeah, no, that was definitely like an editorial project that was basically like my ethic is like, we publish everything by everyone, no matter what. Like, there is no, like, I don't like editors. Like, I think editing sucks. Like, I'm just like, who fucking cares what like my individual opinion is? Like, it means nothing. But no one else feels that way. So I have to make compromises to my weird fucking unbending radical ideas. So what the compromise that I got was like, we will publish something by everyone, but we will not publish everything everyone sends us. And there was one exception to that rule where it was decided collectively, and I was in protest, but not like super in protest, that we wouldn't publish this one poem because it had kind of a fucked up vibe. Actually, there's two. There's one where it was like a poem about like sort of like a stalker like perspective. It was like, "Ooh, I gaze upon you from afar," and it's very vague, and like it's probably just like a weird metaphor or whatever. But I was like, on the off chance that like this person is actually like writing the true experience of them as a creepy stalker, like, we cannot publish this person. Like, fuck that. But yeah, it was always like, if there's some ethical reason, then we wouldn't post something. But there was a few people where like we just like selected like four lines from other poems. We're like, hey, can we just like put this in there? And they're cool with it. So yeah, it was an entire process. I've put out like, I actually have them. Sorry, one second. I put out these like magazine-sized collections with
Wow.
it's like newsprint, and there's like poems and images kind of laid out in funky ways. Poems and images laid out in funky ways and shit. I put out three of those with poets from around here. One is with Rachel Wolf. That's the one. It's called Time Disappears. One is with a poet named Amanda Hutkins, and it's called Trying to End the War. And one is with this poet named Amin Wahba. And I don't have any more of that because that one sold out. But yeah, so that th those were all editorial processes where I was like taking an active role in like shaping and like sequencing and doing that type of stuff. So yeah, I've done some stuff, but I also edited the undergrad literary journal when I was in college. So I've done a lot of random editing shit. I've also worked like sort of as an assistant editor to like newspapers, and I've done editorial shit sort of professionally too.
If Rachel Bell was going to be at the next Sketch Fest, would you definitely more likely do a movie?
Wow.
Well, you could do
That's
one about like your past
a
lives and now where you guys are at now.
past lives perhaps could be the title.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, like Rachel's a superstar, you know. I remember one time, like someone, it was like all the people kind of like have weird fucked up feelings about AWP, the Writers Conference. But there was this like kind of moment when all the people were starting to like interact with that more. And I remember someone, just like a friend, we were just chatting, and they're like, "Why isn't Rachel at AWP?" And I was like, "It's beneath her. Like she's a superstar, and these people are nerds, you know? Like, fuck that." So yeah, I don't know, but yeah, I don't know. Rachel could really make some fucking magic happen, probably, if she wanted to do that. But I don't know. I don't think that's her vibe. I don't think she, I don't know. I don't think she's trying to like do that type of shit. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I daydream a lot about like collaborating with people in different ways. And when I daydream about collaborating with Rachel Bell, she would be like a behind the scenes person who's like getting people to say yes. Like, hey, can we shoot at this hotel or something? Like, I feel like she can get anyone to say yes to anything. She just has that sort of charm. So that's sort of like in my mind's eye where I would like how I would collaborate with Rachel Bell. But I want to be clear, that's just like completely made up shit in my brain. But yeah, I don't know if Rachel's at Catch Fest, that would probably tell me slightly to where going. But like, you know, not there's a lot of people I have a lot of fondness for and a lot of closeness with to go to that shit, and I like connecting with all of them.
Do you think that Catch and Austin should name their first kid after this podcast?
Like
Yeah.
lo-fi breath.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good name. Lo-fi
It is.
breath. Lo-fi Islam.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm down with that. Do you feel like you've
I brought them
rekindled their
together.
love? Do you
Yeah,
feel
'cause
like
they
that's true?
they weren't dating until well, I mean, they had been dating, and then I guess they broke up for a while. And then this podcast really has brought them back together.
I thought about this. I thought similar thoughts. I've sort of seen them cutely interacting on the internet and been really charmed by it and thought it was very lovely. And I've thought, if it wasn't for the Lo-Fi Lit podcast, like, this would never be happening. And yeah, I don't know. I kind of agree. I mean, obviously, like, there's way more to it than that, but I like this kind of narrative. I think the internet's fucked up and bad in many ways, but there can be a certain magic to it that, like, really does allow us to, like, put our hearts into the ether and connect with others in, like, a real way. And I love it when that happens and it's, like, beautiful. And, you know, I'm not trying to speak on anyone else's life, but I'm really fond of Austin and Ketch. I think they're both wonderful people. It makes me happy, the idea of them being happy together.
I would make you, I think you should be the godfather to that child.
Okay, yeah, I'd be down for that.
Like the uncle.
You just, like, if you're the godfather, you just kind of, like, you show up if something fucked up crazy happens, and you kind of, like, are this weird. Do you have a godparent?
No, I don't. I don't even know what they do.
Yeah, I had a godparent, a godmother. I don't think she was called that. But I remember when I graduated high school, she wrote me, like, a pretty lengthy letter. And was like, hey, I'm your godparent. But, like, I sort of stopped doing godparent shit, like, when you were six or something. So, like, my bad. And it was, like, kind of lovely letter. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, I remember in this sort of discursive space of my family, my community, the sort of idea of the godparent was, like, if something tragic happens, and the godparent swoops in and, like, is sort of, like, duty bound to care for this, like, child who's now, like, lost in the world or whatever, which is so, like, not how things work. It's just, like, it's not a movie or whatever, but yeah, that's my understanding of godparents. So yeah, I guess I would be down to take that sort of weird oath for the hypothetical Catch Austin baby, for sure. Lo-fi breath.
Lo-fi, that's a great title, man. Lo-fi breath.
It really is.
So it's almost been,
what if it's been used?
It's almost been 90 minutes. Do you have any stories that you would like to share that you have not shared yet? Because you're a great storyteller, great orator.
Wow, thank you. You know, I don't know.
Are there any stories about cake? Are there any stories about ladders? Do you have any stories about flashlights?
yeah, maybe. Ladders? I got ladders for right now. When I was a kid, my fifth and sixth grade PE teacher was this guy named Ron Coleman, and he was on a national championship football team at the University of Nebraska in the 70s, and he wore his fucking championship ring around, I think, every day. Mm-hmm. And the big star of that team was a dude named Johnny Rogers. And I remember he would later become known as RC. RC would always say that, like, he only tackled Johnny Rogers one time, and it's because he tripped. RC tripped, and he, like, accidentally, like, tripped into him and tackled him. That's how much better he was than him. But yeah, that dude, like, 2 years after I graduated high school, fell off a ladder and died.
Whoa.
And it was, like, a horrible tragedy that, like, I was not, like, as close, because he was also the golf coach in high school, and the town I'm from randomly has, like, a really, especially in, like, the 80s, it had, like, a really good golf course. So yeah, there's a lot of, like, golf energy where I grew up. So it was, like, gutting to so many people. So yeah, that's the ladder thing. Flashlights, I've been getting to this thing where are you familiar with EDC?
No.
It means everyday carry. And it's just, like, the shit you put in your pocket. And, like, how can you have, like, the maximized stuff that you carry? So, like, there's, like, a lot of different vibes. Like, there's some survivalist vibes. There's some, like, gun nut vibes. There's some, like, geek vibes. But I found EDC vids to be very soothing. And one of the key products in any, like, EDC carry is a flashlight. So I've seen so many videos the last, like, 4 months of dudes just talking about their flashlight. And, like, talking about why this flashlight is cool, and, like, why it's cool to have a copper flashlight versus a fucking titanium flashlight. So, yeah, I've been inundated with flashlight content. I don't have a good cake story. Oh, wait, okay, I can come up with one. You familiar with the band Cake?
No.
They're a band from the 90s, basically. They had a song called Short Skirt, Long Jacket. That's like, it was kind of a low-key hit. And like a lot of people, like if people, you know, my age older maybe like heard that song in a bar, they'd be like, whoa, I've heard this song. Anyways, I'd randomly chatted about Cake with a buddy who, this was prime, like I don't want friends from high school interacting with poetry friends, who then sort of out of blue got us Cake tickets. And then I mentioned having these Cake tickets to a friend who was a poet. And they're like, oh, we should all go to the Cake show together. And I was like, no, this is the last thing on earth that I want. And then I ended up having this sort of weird disastrous night where one of my high school friends interacted with one of my poetry friends. And I felt so anxious and terrible the entire time at this Cake show. But I will say this, Cake was like a quietly radical band. Every show, they give a tree to a person. And they like make the person come on stage and promise to plant the tree. And they do this like long talk about how trees are important and how we need to plant more trees. And then like he did this thing too where he was like during this like I don't know, I'm not gonna talk about Cake anymore, but like he did this thing where he sort of just riffed about how like the world puts us on separate sides and we just fight with each other for no reason. And these arbitrary lines are like, what's destroying us? And he was just like saying these things in this kind of like weird, like droning poetic voice, like in the middle of like what in the song is just like an interlude, but it just extended like 8 minutes. And he just like said all this like philosophy and shit. And it was like kind of moving. So I was really like, it was a really like surprisingly amazing show, even though Cake is like a joke band.
Are there any poets you went and saw and you're like, oh, this person's not gonna be good at all, but then they just like shocked you?
It's a great one. So I generally try not to have that type of attitude going into any sort of poetry experience. I really do try to have like an open heart or something, but I'm not fucking Mahatma Gandhi, you know. I'm prone to pissy moodiness or whatever. So like with poetry I'm pretty good about keeping it in check. So I can't think of a specific time where that thing used to happen, but there has been times where I kind of didn't expect much from someone, and then they really brought it, and I was like, oh, this person is amazing. I thought they were just like kind of an average Joe or whatever, and yeah, I love that when that happens. It delights me. And when I go to a reading where I don't fucking know anyone, I'm always just waiting for it, for the person to fucking like let the fucking sun fly out of their heart or whatever. And when it happens, I'm always delighted. But you never know what's gonna happen. Like that's the thing I found. I'm like, ooh, this person like wearing cool boots or some shit. Like they're gonna like have fucking awesome poems, and then like their poems are kind of boring or whatever. But then like this random person just like says the most fucking awesome shit you've ever heard. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I always try to keep I love being surprised by poetry. And yeah, with readings I try to like cultivate that potential.
Well, thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll have to do something in the future again. Are you down for that or no?
Yeah, dude.
I like collaboration.
I like chatting with you. Yeah, no, I'm down to collab, to chat, to do whatever.
I want to do something for Catch Fest, but she's insisted on everything being like in person.
Interesting. Yeah. Would you come?
I would love to come if I get a car by then. Looking for one because I got my other car got hit. Before
Oh,
that, my
damn.
other car got hit, and I was we get this money from the insurance, and then you got to go buy a new car. It's all this bullshit. But
This
anyways,
exact
yeah.
thing happened to me.
Yeah,
I had a car get double hit, and then it was annoying.
it
'Cause you get
is
money,
annoying.
but you can't get as, it's like you're always gonna get a shittier car. It fucking
Yeah,
sucks.
it's fucked up. But yeah, I would love to come down there.
Well,
That'd be awesome.
yeah, I don't know. I mean, it'd be cool if you're there. And yeah, I don't know. So you write poems? Is that true?
I don't publish them, but yeah, I try. I take workshops. I take online workshops. And
So,
I write
okay,
in
yeah, I remember
there.
hearing you say that. Like, you sort of you create stuff for those contexts. That's
Yeah.
kind of your like your way. Yeah, I mean, it'd be rad to see you doing being a fucking motherfucking poet in Philadelphia or whatever. And yeah, I don't know if you were to want to put together some IRL audio verite shit where you're like, I did a thing at one of the Catch Fests, as well as this reading in Chicago that was kind of a slight precursor to Catch Fest, where I recorded every single reading and posted them all on SoundCloud, and people really loved that. So yeah, people love it when you record shit and share it, especially if it's like them doing a cool reading. So yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm going to tentatively say I think it'd be cool to collaborate in some way
We'll make a movie.
at the next Catch Fest. What that will be, or if it will happen, I don't know. But I love that.
Well, thanks for coming
And
on, man.
yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
I'll see you later.
Bye bye.
Bye-bye.